think about the people on the other side of the table. They're human beings too. And more often than not, they are desperate for us to be the one when we walk in the room.
I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. This episode is brought to you by Backstage. Become a member and get access to more performing arts jobs than any other platform. To try it for free for 30 days, go to backstage.com/action. Again, that's backstage.com/action. Become a member like me. Enjoy this episode.
All right, my guest is Justin Guarini, performer, actor, musician, host. Justin Guarini's performance career launched with the first season of American Idol in 2002, where he was the runner-up to Kelly Clarkson. His stage and screen appearances since then include Broadway productions of American Idiot, Romeo and Juliet, Wicked, and Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. And we have also all seen him on TV as the lovable Lil Sweet in the hilarious Diet Dr. Pepper commercials. He has a new podcast, Audition Secrets, which is available anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Justin, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
So, good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So I'm just going to tell the listeners, we're going to break this down into basically two parts, and we're going to discuss external challenges to auditions and then the internal challenges to auditions. But first, I want to talk quickly about your podcast. I've listened to your podcast. It's good. You have some great guests on there.
Thanks.
Some Broadway superstars.
Yeah. It's, you know, it was really interesting when I started this whole thing about a year ago. It was because of an audition that I went to. And I mean, I've been auditioning for a long time. I've almost been in business for about 20 years now. And, you know, starting with American Idol, that's its own kind of audition. And then going on from there and auditioning for Broadway and television and all the other crap that I've auditioned for, I built up a good resume. Yet I went into this one audition for a huge Broadway show. I learned 20 of the most wordy songs you could ever imagine for two different characters. And long story short, they basically made me do everything but put on a tutu and jump through a flaming hoop. Over a period of like 3 months, I auditioned. And then I waited. My agent waited for weeks afterwards. And they came back with just a simple, nah. Now look, your listeners know. Anybody who's in this business knows that rejection is a huge part of what we do every single day. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like baseball. You strike out more than you get singles. And for me, it was so disrespectful because I consider my time valuable. And I think everyone who takes the time to learn a script or learn a song, whatever, that's valuable time that we can't get back. So they made me come in for like over a period of 3 months and they were working me and I did everything. I mean, I went so far as to interview the person who was in the role, and unofficially interview him, and really get into the mindset of the character because I knew that I would be coming in after and replacing. Yet they just said, nah. And again, the rejection didn't bother me so much as they didn't give me anything to work with. You know, if they had been like, no, because of XYZ, then okay, I can take that. That's an actionable thing that I can work on and be better the next time. But they were like, nah. And so I was shocked. My agent was shocked. The casting director was shocked. So it began to make me question whether I wanted to stay in the business because, you know, if I could be disrespected at this level, and I'm not top of the pile by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think anybody deserves that kind of disrespect. I felt like I've put together a good body of work. At least give me something to work with here, people, and be kind. So I started asking myself questions. I'm like, how can I never feel this way again? And I started talking to my coaches, my mentors, my friends who are superstars in the industry. And I started asking them about the horror stories that they went through and the crappy auditions that they went through. And it just morphed into this thing where I was like, okay, how can I not feel this way? But also make sure that other people don't feel this way. Because there are people who, I mean, like, I had the luxury of being able to go to the final callback as my first audition, right? And yet there are people who go to audition, cattle call, all these things. And I said, okay, how can I make sure that they don't get disrespected, or worse, disrespect themselves before they even walk into the room? And that was where Audition Secrets was born. And, you know, it says, you know, the book is the behind the scenes guidebook for nailing more auditions and booking more jobs. And it has inside it these 5 actionable items, as well as stories that are from my career and from other people's careers and things that I've seen that people can take, and they can see a difference in their auditions like today. I wanted it to be fast. I wanted people to get the information and to use it.
That's awesome. And that's the whole reason that this podcast was born as well, is that I wanted to find answers for myself that would make my auditions better and make me succeed as quickly as possible. And I figured if I wanted to know it, probably a whole bunch of other people wanted to know it too.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's like all the mistakes that I've made, all the pitfalls that I've fallen into, and I feel like you're the same way. It's like, man, I learned so much. And yet there's like, there's going to never be a shortage of actors in the world, right? There's never going to be a shortage of people going into BFA programs. And if you and I can change one actor's life, if we can help them avoid one of the mistakes that we made, then, you know, I think we're doing something good for people. And I love that. That makes me excited. I always was like, you know, those who can't do teach, and I really had this stick up my ass, right? Like, then I started to actually teach, because somebody was like, hey, can you help out my daughter with this? I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I fell in love with it. Just as much as I love performing, I love watching that light bulb go on above a student or a client's head. And, you know, that's part of what my podcast is. That's part of, I know what your podcast is, the book, and it just excites me. I love it.
So I want to ask you, you told a story about really putting in the work and doing a lot of good work for this audition, and then you basically got disrespected by the people who were casting it, and you thought, fuck this. Do I even want to continue doing this?
Yeah.
Do I even want to? And that rings so true to me. I went to one audition. It was one audition that ever did this to me. It wasn't in Chicago. It wasn't where I'm from, in Minneapolis. It was in another state. And I left that audition thinking, I don't have to do this anymore. I don't ever want to put myself in that position again. But it wasn't really what I had done. I could have been more prepared. I could have known more. It was at the beginning of my career. But when I say disrespected, I mean, I've never been talked to like that in my life by anybody. And I remember thinking, I don't need to ever put myself in that situation again. And then I got over it. But it sounds like a similar situation where you actually did do the work. I mean, so what's your advice for people who run into situations like that?
Well, you know, the thing that you went through is far too common, because I'm not a particularly religious person. I consider myself spiritual, but there's something, a passage in the Bible, and for those of your listeners who are familiar with the Bible, forgive me if I completely slaughter the passage, but it's something about, we saw ourselves as grasshoppers, therefore the Pharisees saw us as grasshoppers. And within that, there's something really interesting, because when I relate that to the acting community and us as actors, there's so many of us. I mean, and then there's so few productions to be in comparison, right? Yet we see ourselves as cattle. I mean, the fuck, they call it a cattle call, right? I mean, we have been trained to see ourselves as these little things who are expendable. And that is something that I'm trying to change. Because at the end of the day, what's really happening, if we take we turn the tables, and we think about the people on the other side of the table, they're human beings too. And more often than not, they are desperate for us to be the one when we walk in the room, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
So if we begin to change our, and I do a lot of mindset work in my coaching and what it is that I do, because we start off being told that we are cattle, hence cattle call, that we see ourselves as these small things. But if we just shift perspective and even like, you know, walk a mile in someone else's shoes and realize that, okay, when I walk into that room, instead of the, I'm begging, I gotta get this job, and coming at it from a sort of lesser than perspective, and a sort of a begging for the job and, oh God, please let them cast me. Instead of walking into the room that way, just changing your mindset and thinking, okay, this person on the other side of the table has got 10 other projects that they're casting, if not more. And sometimes they have a whole office full of, they are desperate for me to be the one. They want to cast me in this role so they can get the fuck on with their lives and the rest of their stuff, right? So I'm already walking in at an advantage. And so if I do the work, if I am prepared, then I'm walking in an even footing. It's about having the perspective, not just the perspective, but living the fact that, okay, I'm on even footing with these people. And when you walk in that way, you begin to own your own power and there's less of this desperation. And you know, you mentioned before we started recording that your listeners love actionable items, things that they can take from this podcast and use today to see a difference in their auditions. And one of the biggest things, one of my favorite things to teach people is don't ever lie. And it's a simple three-step process. When we walk into the room, more often than not, the people on the other side of the table say to us, how are you doing? Or what's up? So ask us how we are, right? That's the standard sort of greeting that we get from the people on the other side of the table. Now, just rewind a little bit. Whether we're new or we've been auditioning for, you know, decades, there's always an element of nerves or excitement or anticipation outside the room, right? And more often than not, when we're new, it's nerves, it's like terror, it's just you're jangled, maybe your train was late, maybe your dog shit on the rug, or maybe something happened to you before you got into the place. You're just kind of trying to get yourself together. You hear your name called and it's like your blood pressure jacks up, your heart rate goes, you know, your palms get sweaty and you're like, fuck, okay, here it is, time to go, oh God. And you get in the door and you step across the threshold and that person asks you how you're doing. And all of a sudden, the first thing that most of us do, even experienced people do, is we boldface lie to the people on the other side of the table. And we say, oh, yeah, I'm great. Hey, I'm having a great day. Everything's awesome. And if your listeners could see me, you know, it's like that thing when you look in someone's eyes and they look like they're a sort of a deer in headlights and you can kind of tell that they don't know what they're talking about. That look, I don't know how to describe that to your listeners, but the people on the other side of the table, one of their jobs is to sniff out lies and bullshit. And when you walk in the door and you lie off the dribble, you're setting yourself back. You're setting yourself on the pile with every other actor. And casting directors and directors and people on the other side of the table are used to it, right? They put it in the back of their heads. They don't mind. Oh, this person's just nervous. Oh, whatever. But imagine the change. Imagine the difference, and it's subtle, but it's so huge. If you walked into the door and they said to you, how are you doing? And you said something to the effect of, you know what? I'm unbelievably nervous right now. I just was sitting outside thinking, oh my God, let me get this here. Get my beats. But I'm excited to be here. I love this character. I've really worked hard on it, and I can't wait to play with you and get your feedback on this. I mean, it is so fucking stupidly simple, but it is something that will take you and every actor that uses it and separate you from 99.9% of the people who walk in the audition room. And in the book, there's that simple three-step process, and I just kind of breeze through it because we don't have that much time. You walk in, you tell them in as few words how you're really feeling. I mean, don't go into a whole diatribe about your, you know, your Uncle Clem's pet lemur has throat cancer and your what, not all that. You know, just tell them how you're feeling in the moment, good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't have to be bad either. Then shift it to either you're excited to be here, the work that you've done, what you've enjoyed about this role, how, you know, oh my goodness, this character reminds me so much of something that happened to me in my childhood. Again, keep it brief. And then the third part is say, I'm excited to work with you. I can't wait to hear your feedback. I can't wait to have a discussion, a dialogue with you. Because, you know, we talked about remembering that you are on even footing, sometimes at an advantage when you walk into the audition room, because these people really want you to be the one so that they can get the fuck on with their lives, right? And then two, not victimizing yourself or lying rather when you walk into the room, just owning your own power and go ahead, be nervous, be who you are and be human, be real, because that's what these people want, right? They want to see you. They don't want to see some bullshit version of you, because that's what 99.9% of the other people are bringing into the room. And then the third point I want to make is that instead of walking into the audition room and thinking of this as, I've got to book the job, here's a performance, I've got to, I mean, that's, yes, that's part of it, but walk into the audition room and realize that this is a dialogue between artists. This is a back and forth. And you know what? Some of that conversation, it's like we deal with assholes every day, right? You know, especially if we're in the service industry, we deal with those survival jobs. We deal with assholes all the time, but you got to still serve them, right? They're still the customer. And so, you know, it's a dialogue between you and the people on the other side of the table. And so it's a back and forth. It's not this performance, oh my God, please love me, hire me. It's a dialogue where you're talking back and forth. Those are subtle shifts that you can make in your auditioning that will completely separate you from the majority of the people who walk in the room.
This episode will continue right after this. Backstage has been a leader in the entertainment industry since the 60s. Their casting department publishes more than 30,000 casting notices every year, from projects ranging from major studio productions to indie films, both union and non-union. That's more than any other platform. I've been a member for a while now. I think you should be too. To try it for free for 30 days, go to backstage.com/action. That's backstage.com/action. Now back to the episode.
I love what you're saying, and I couldn't agree more. I've been talking a lot with a friend of mine about the value of authenticity in auditioning and this business in general, but specifically auditioning. And we were like musing together and thinking, well, what would actually happen if you walked in and you just said, I'm fucking nervous.
Yes.
To be totally honest, I'm sweating balls right now.
It's so refreshing. It's so humanizing, isn't it? Like these people on the other side of the table have to watch so many people. I mean, think about it. Let's just, again, turn the tables and think about the people on the other side of the table. What's your favorite TV show, Lee?
Just
a favorite.
Ozark.
Okay, great. Ozark, great actors, great plot. Okay, now imagine the most intense scene, the scene where everybody is coming to the house and they're gonna shoot and kill this family, right? And they're running around and like, we gotta go, and would you please, for the love of God, just stop arguing with me and let's go. And four actors. There's the mom, the dad, is this, and then the son and the daughter. Now imagine that scene. That's probably about a minute and 30 second scene. Let's just say everybody's running around. They've got dialogue. It's tight. It's interesting. It's exciting. It's this crazy scene. Now imagine watching an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours of just that scene playing over and over and over again. Now, as an acting exercise, watching, you know, Jason Bateman, and Laura Linney, I mean, you could, in that 3 hours, you could dissect their performances and you could find gold in all of that, right? Just seeing that same scene over and over again. But now imagine you have the first scene with the original cast, and then over that next 3 hours, there are four different actors playing that same scene over and over and over and over and over again. Some of them are good. Some of the chemistry works. Some of the dialogue gets fucked up. Some of the, and you've got to watch the same scene over and over and over again. It's like torture. Yet it's what people on the other side of the table do all the time. They are living the same sort of hell that we live. And so getting back to your point, authenticity, when somebody walks in and they're just like, oh man, my dog just shit in my car. You know, imagine how awesome that is, because it gives them permission on the other side of the table to just breathe a sigh of relief and be like, yeah, I'm going through it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked about it before on the podcast, where I used to volunteer for some casting directors, where I was able to sit on the couch.
It's the greatest thing you could do.
Oh my God, it's incredible. It's incredible. If you can pay to do that. What was interesting was a lot of people thought that I was the client automatically, because I'm just one guy, I'm sitting on the couch. They automatically think I'm the client. And It was weird, and it got very tiring to see people come in over and over again and look at me like I'm some sort of god.
Yeah.
And I only saw, you know, a handful of auditions. But on the 50th audition of people coming in, and they're so nervous, but they've raised those people up on a pedestal so high that it's no longer a collaboration. It's no longer a human to human connection.
Yeah. It's a simple yet a huge mindset shift when you can authentically say to yourself, I am on even footing. We are collaborating together. I don't care if you're brand new. I mean, there are those stories where people walk into the room and they get their first audition. It's huge. I cannot tell you how freeing that is when you walk in and you're just like, I'm worthy to be here. You know, it's like I am on the same footing as these people in the room, and we are all trying to work towards the same goal, which is to make an awesome production, to make awesome art together. And guess what? I'm going to come in. Something else too about the casting office. When you're in the casting office, I live outside of New York, and when I come into a casting office or room, I see so many people that I see all the time. You know, it's like, especially when you're in a smaller town, you see those people that you see all the time because you're the same type, and or you've been in the same, you know what I mean? Like that you get called in with the same people. And I love talking. I love hanging out. And yet also I've tried to not do as much of that because I want to focus on my work. And the whole point of me saying this is that we get so caught up in the dynamics of the office competition, looking around, oh, that person looks like me. Oh, that person, you know, we listen to the music and whatever, or the sides wafting under the door. And we think, oh, I didn't make that choice. Oh, I didn't do that. I didn't. And, you know, we're piling all the shit on our back before we even walk into the room. So what I love to tell people is when you can make the distinction and the subtle mental shift that, okay, I'm going to walk into this casting office, and no one else has lived my life. No one else has made the choices that I have made in my life. No one else has the perspective that I have. No one else has had the experiences that I've had. Therefore, I am bringing my unique perspective to this character. Now, of course, you got to do the work. We go study classes in order to dig through and find our choices and our beats and whatever the hell you want to say. But in terms of competition and feeling that need to one up the person who's sitting next to you, or the person who went before you, or the person who's going to go after you, I am of the firm belief that if you truly root yourself in your own experiences, if you truly do the work and understand that we're not playing a character, we are aligning our experiences with the character so that the character plays through us. And if we can really truly make that distinction, I know it sounds a little woo-woo, but like if we can really truly make that distinction, then there is no fucking competition, because no one else can walk into the room and deliver the performance that we deliver. Now that performance might be good, it might be bad, you know, we may be off, whatever, but it doesn't matter. Because there is no competition when you come at it that way, because no one else can deliver what you deliver. So then if you walk into the room knowing that, if you walk into the room knowing that you're on the same footing, if you walk into the room knowing that this is a dialogue between you and the people on the other side of the table, you can say, hey, here's what I got. It's like you're a street vendor and you're like, yo, I got this. And it's totally mine. And you can walk down the street over there and get something that's kind of like it, but it won't be like this. And do you want it? Great. If you don't want it, great. I'm going to own it. And you walk out of the room with that, knowing that you just left your mark on the room, that no one else can leave. They want to be on board with me? Great. They don't want to be on board with me? Great. No problem. They have given me the opportunity to experience another audition to see how I work in the room, to learn and to just gather more data that I can then go back and say, okay, I could have done this better. And oh, that was really good. I'm going to keep that. And so it changes this audition from being this sort of firing squad to just this gathering, this data mining, where the more you do it, the better you get, the more you have to analyze, and the stronger you become.
I think this is a principle that is really hard for people to get in the first years of their auditioning careers. I bet you probably started this way. I definitely started this way. Everyone I talk to pretty much starts this way, is they go in with the mindset of thinking, what does the casting director want? And then they try to mold their performance into that. They think that the idea is to get as close to that as they can. It makes sense. It makes sense. Why wouldn't that be the case? They give you the specs for the role. So let's try to fit those specs as well as we can. We get the sides. Let's try to determine how these sides are supposed to be played, and then play them as close to that as we can. That makes sense. Now, what Justin's talking about is you can't have any competition if you are bringing the role through yourself. And what I mean is, like he said, we all have different perspectives. So the only way, if Justin and I were going in for the same role, the only way that we would be competing with each other really is if we were both trying to do what we thought the casting director wanted. Then it's like, who can get closer to this idea of what the casting director wants? But what Justin can't do is he cannot play that part through Lee. And what Lee cannot do is play that part through Justin. I didn't have your life. I don't know your perspective. Therefore, I literally cannot do that. And I'm telling you, once you realize that, and once you start playing roles, once you start going into auditions thinking that way, that you're going to do it with your perspective, your unique perspective, that's when you start to book shit.
Hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well said. And I think a really good example of what you're saying, and the fact that I can't play your perspective and your experiences in life through this character, is like if I were to play the demon barber of Fleet Street. Now, what's interesting about that is I've never murdered anyone. I hope I never have the misfortune of, whether it's in self-defense or otherwise, of murdering anyone. And when you walk in trying to play a murderer, it's just, it's not authentic. It's not truthful, right? Yet, like what I said, like what you said, when you begin to look behind the specs, the breakdown, the character breakdown, and you begin to see, okay, what are the other things that have motivated this person to murder? And I don't know what it feels like to murder someone, but I do know what anger and rage feel like. And I know what those experiences have been in my life. I know what shame feels like. I know what deep regret feels like. And I have experiences in my sort of color palette and my box of crayons of life. And so when you look at the sides and you have the instinct to think, okay, this is how this casting director wants me to play this. And side note, how presumptuous is it that we would think that we know what the casting director wants? 9 times out of 10, the casting director doesn't know what the casting director wants. They get the sides. They're just there as the filter, right? They're just there as, okay, this person does X, Y, and Z. They got the sides right. They seem like they know what they're doing. Blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, it's up to the people way up the food chain what they want. And at the end of the day, what they truly want is you. They want authentic, exciting choices, and they just want you. And like you said, the people who go in realizing and recognizing that you don't have to quote unquote play a character, you just have to uncover the character within you. And so that vulnerability, that humanity, which in society now seems to be like, you know, we've got filters, we've got all these social media things where we put up the best of, right? We put up the best of real. That is not what books you the role inside the room. It is the raw, nasty, dirty, ugly truth that gets you the job.
You touched on something when people are perhaps losing motivation, questioning whether or not they even want to be in the business at all. And one of the things that we were going to talk about, which we'll do in just a second, but first I want to say one thing. If you are enjoying this this episode with Justin, take a screenshot of your phone, however you're listening, and post it on Instagram and tag Justin Guarini, which is Justin Guarini, and me, Lee Foster, which is L-E-I-G-H Foster 123, and just post it. It'll help us spread the word. That'd be awesome. But Justin, before we go on, how can people find out more about you, your website, your book, your podcast?
The simplest thing, you can just go to auditionsecrets.com. auditionsecrets.com. That will give you a link to the book. It will give you a link to private coaching. In about a month, I'm going to release my Audition Secrets Quick Start System, which is going to have a whole sort of online component to it. All the private coaching that I do is online. I love being with my family. And so I try and do as much as I can from the comfort of my own home. And I would love to teach you from the comfort of your own home as well. But yeah, auditionsecrets.com is the place to get the book and to listen to the podcast as well.
So we're talking about staying motivated and sane in this business. And what are your recommendations for that? Yeah.
Well, you know, self-care is huge. And I'll... There's this young guy that I worked with, and I say young guy, like, I mean, he's only a few years younger than I am. He was like, the morning of a presentation for backers for a new musical, he comes up to me and is like, oh man, I was out late last night, just drinking gin. I had to take 3 prednisone just to be able to phonate this morning. I'm thinking to myself, like, what's wrong with you? Like, God. I was like, oh man, that's crazy. And it's so interesting because, like, yeah, I get it. In my 20s and early 30s, I was like, sure, partying, having a great time. There's nothing wrong with going out and having drinks or partying or do whatever it is that you do. But there is something to be said for discipline and self-care. And those things really do help your sanity because it's just like, why are you going to – it's hard enough, people, to audition. It's hard enough to prepare and to memorize sometimes pages of sides a day or two, if you're lucky, before you got to go into the room and deliver it. And so really getting into a routine of good self-care is so, so vital to the foundation of sanity in this business because, you know, that's the base of what you're working from. And if you don't feel good and you don't feel 100%, Why are you going in the room? I mean, it's one thing if you're a little sick, but you know what I'm saying. If you're doing shit to fuck up your own game, then come on. So really getting onto the specifics of how to stay sane, because I can give you advice all the day, like take care of yourself, you know, I'm like Nana, but like something specific that people can do. When I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. What the hell is the point? I do something called an origin exercise. And my origin exercise is based on kind of like the superheroes, you know, Marvel movies are big and everything now. And I love Spider-Man. Actually, well, Deadpool is my favorite, but Spider-Man is my second favorite. And Spider-Man is the example that I use. Like Peter Parker was taking some photos and he got bit by the spider. And the next day he woke up and he had a fever. And then all of a sudden he starts seeing his muscles act differently and he feels different. And he's like, oh my God. And then he starts to discover his power and then boom, he's Spider-Man. Well, it's the same sort of thing. Every superhero has an origin story. Some moment in time where something happened to them and their life was irrevocably altered for the better, most part. And we're the same. Actors are the same way. I will never forget the first time I heard the Phantom of the Opera soundtrack. It scared the living shit out of me. I was a little kid. And yet I was so enthralled by what Michael did and by what Sarah did and by what just how they sounded in this crazy music. It's like, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber writes these crazy lines, and I had been in choirs and I had the barest grasp of music, but it changed my life. I remember my father came into the room and I had the covers over top of my head and he was like, what's wrong? And I said, oh, it's really scaring me. You know, there are there's this exercise that I call the origin story, and it's going back to that moment in time. Patti LuPone said when she was on stage tap dancing, she looked out at the audience. She said to herself as a little child, "Oh my God, they love me." And that was her moment. Everyone has that moment where they either saw a show or saw a movie or, you know, that whatever that moment is. And I tell people, go back to that. When you're at your lowest, go back to that and write it down. Write down how you felt. Write down what you were wearing. Write down what you saw, the time and place. And if you can't really remember it, or go to your parents or your grandparents or your aunt and uncle and get their perspective too. If it's a moment where you're performing on stage, how did your parents feel? Go ask them how they felt when you were up there. It really helps you to remember why the fuck we put ourselves through this shit. Because it is, I don't care, at my level, above me, just starting out, it is a challenge. It is a complete mind fuck, and it is a drag, or can be. And part of my goal in my life and with this book and this business and my podcast is to help people remember that this is supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be having a good time. We get paid to play, right? We could go and put on a tie and go to a 9-to-5, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, by the way. We could sit behind a desk and we could do data entry, or we could spend the rest of our lives being a waiter, or God knows I was a door-to-door alarm salesman at one point. I so badly didn't want a real job. So yeah, anyway, so believe me, I understand about not wanting to have that 9-to-5, but at the end of the day, this is supposed to be fun. And when you're really at your lowest or you're really struggling, it helps to go back to that origin story, to that time when you were like, "Oh, I love this. This is why, I don't know what I like about this, but I got to do this. This is what I have to do." And it just kind of helps reset the system.
I love that. Well, Justin Guarini, this has been really an interesting interview, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I want to ask you one more question before I let you go. To the thousands of actors who are listening to this, maybe in the early stages of their career, if you could give them one piece of advice that would do them the most good, what do you think that would be?
Oh man, one piece of advice. I think one of the greatest things that we can remember and that we can invest in, one of the greatest investments we can make in our career is in our own self-worth. Like I said, going back to what I said before, that biblical passage, we saw ourselves as grasshoppers. Therefore, the Pharisees, the people in charge, saw us as grasshoppers. There may be thousands of people. There are sometimes thousands of people that you're quote unquote competing against for one job. There may be times when you feel like, "I don't know why I decided to do this. My mom and dad were right." Yet when you realize that you are doing this for a reason, not out of just happenstance, not just like, "Oh, this," I mean, plenty of people get touched by things. I just watched the last episode of Stranger Things. And 99.9% of the people who watch that show are just going to be heartbroken and, "Oh my God, isn't this beautiful?" But that 0.1% of us say, "Oh my God, this is beautiful. That's heartbreaking. I want to do that."
This episode has been brought to you by Backstage. Get access to more performing arts jobs than any other platform by going to backstage.com/action to get 30 days for free. I'm Lee Foster. Thanks for listening.